My research for today's commentary was aided by thoughts from John Hawkins and Stephen Law of the National Review, and so I give credit to them for their research. I was born in September 1942. Our country was engaged in a massive world war, and the outcome of that war was uncertain. Thank God for the patriotic Americans who prosecuted that war and the ones before and after it. I will always be thankful that I live in this great country and in better times than today. I began my broadcasting career in January 1963, and through the years, I was proud to be a part of the media, a short time as a newspaper reporter, and then more than 54 years in radio and television. And that gives me a unique vantage point from which to lament the business I once loved. Gone is the objectivity and truth that we valued so highly. It has been replaced with partisan bias and a total disregard for truth. Whether you are a Republican or Democrat, that should concern you greatly. An example of fake news bias was evident a few days ago when a biased CNN reporter named Caitlin Collins began shouting irrelevant questions at President Trump as he was on stage with the President of the European Commission. President Trump and the EU representative had just proposed actions on tariffs that would open up the European market for American trade. As they tried to explain the progress made on this trade program, Ms. Collins of CNN began shouting at Trump. She wanted him to talk about Michael Cohen and the Democrat witch hunt. Those questions were not remotely relevant to the occasion and were obviously designed to embarrass the President of the United States in front of the EU representative. This CNN mole was excluded from the next session, and that biased, hate-filled network joined with Trump-hating Democrats like Pelosi and Schumer and the morons at MSNBC to criticize Trump for not putting up with this reporter's nonsense. According to the militant fake news media, barring this biased woman was a cardinal sin. But how soon they forget that Barack Hussein Obama himself had a reporter removed from his press conference for asking questions Obama did not want to answer. That reporter that Obama expelled should have been expelled, and so should Caitlin Collins of CNN. The fake media outrage shows their hypocrisy and hate for this president. It has reached outrageous proportions. When we can no longer count on the media for fair and balanced reporting, it makes it difficult for the average, ordinary American to get the truth. When the fake news media fails to fairly report the obstructionist agenda of Democrats, there is no incentive for those liberal Democrats to cooperate with the president to move America forward. They don't want America to move forward. That would mean that our people have been better served, and the Democrat Party desperately wants to control America again. To get their political power back, Democrats have to make sure that the Trump agenda fails. An agenda that average, ordinary Americans voted for, and one in which, if Trump fails, America fails. In a moment, with research help from Stephen Law of the National Review, I'll explain the clear and present danger should the Democrats win big this November. But first, let me tell you how liberal Democrats have hurt the poor, the very people they claim to represent. Democrats have long since realized that people who are poor and dependent on the government will vote for them, even while it is their liberal policies that created the poverty and dependency of the poor. That's why every ghetto in America is controlled, lock, stock, and barrel by liberal Democrats. It's also why Democrats want open borders, where millions of uneducated, poorly trained immigrants can sweep across our borders unencumbered. These are not human beings to the Democrat Party. They are guaranteed votes. Unfortunately, so many destitute Americans have yet to realize that liberal policies do not fight poverty. They maintain it. While Democrats cling to the idea of buying votes with government handouts, it is also those handouts that take away any incentive to work, to educate yourself, or become self-sufficient. Consider the enormous number of people on welfare today while jobs go unfilled. Almost every store I visit has a sign outside seeking employees. One Mexican restaurant on Facebook went out of business for lack of employees. Why not set up a program to track welfare recipients and put them in touch with job openings? If they consistently turn down these jobs, let their welfare end. The problem, of course, is that if the president or Republicans proposed this common sense solution, Democrats and the fake news allies would do what they always do: attack mindlessly. They offer no solutions, just attacks on those seeking solutions. Perhaps the worst thing about that is the betrayal of the poor people involved. Many of them are having a hard time and looking for a little help to make life easier for them and their families. Little do they realize that the help the Liberal Democrats offer them is akin to a drug dealer offering them a free sample. Not every liberal intends to hook the people they're helping on poverty, but they're certainly not very upset when it happens. The more poor, dependent Americans there are, the more votes liberals and socialists get, the more needed they feel, the larger the budget becomes for the non-functional big government programs they support. Liberals have a lot of perverse incentives to keep as many Americans poor and dependent as possible, and they respond to those incentives in a big way. Americans are a generous people, and most of us are fine with having a safety net that helps people who get down on their luck. The problem with liberal Democrats is that they do everything humanly possible to turn that safety net into a hammock. They oppose limiting the amount of time people can be on the programs, along with drug testing and work requirements. Obviously, encouraging people to get comfortable on the dole is bad for the country. But it's even worse for the people involved. It's one thing to get in a tough spot, to take some assistance for a few months, and then get back on your feet. But spending years or even decades on welfare, generation after generation on welfare, it's a trap that makes you dependent on government while utterly ruining you as a human being. There was a time when even the staunchest liberals agreed with that sentiment. Conservatives disagree with Democrat Franklin D. Roosevelt on a lot of things, but he was absolutely right when he said this: "The lessons of history, confirmed by the evidence immediately before me, show conclusively that continued dependence on government induces a spiritual disintegration fundamentally destructive to the national fiber. To dole out relief this way is to administer a narcotic, a subtle destroyer of the human spirit. It is a violation of the traditions of America. Work must be found for able-bodied but destitute workers." So said Franklin D. Roosevelt. Today we see more jobs available than people to take those jobs, and yet generations of welfare recipients remain locked into their dependence upon working taxpayers. John Hawkins' book, 101 Things All Young Adults Should Know, points out that problems in America that left unattended will bring our country down. While there are certainly Republicans who've been paid off by the business lobby to support illegal immigration, Democrats almost across the board are in favor of allowing as many illegal immigrants as possible into the country. If illegals were primarily taking jobs as reporters or college professors and lawyers, liberals would ferociously oppose illegal immigration. But since they are taking their jobs that otherwise would go to poor Americans, liberals don't care. There are millions of poor Americans who are out of work simply because they can't work as cheaply as an illegal immigrant who doesn't have health care expenses, for instance, doesn't pay car insurance, and who can lie on their taxes with impunity. Moreover, there are millions of other poor Americans who are making a few dollars less per hour because they are in a field of work full of illegal aliens who can work for less per hour because they don't have the same costs. Few policies would do more to put poor Americans back to work than getting rid of the foreigners who are breaking the law and cheating the system in order to steal their jobs away. It is a disgrace that there are Americans who can't let their kids play in the yard for fear of drug dealers on the corner, drive-by shootings, and roaming gangs. Crime makes it harder to raise our children, decreases property values, and stops people from freely moving around their neighborhoods. Rich and middle-class Americans generally don't have big problems with crime because they don't have liberals helping them. And so they simply won't tolerate it. So it's the poor Americans, saddled with liberal helpers, who suffer the most because of crime. Yet liberals seem to spend all of their time worrying about the criminals, not the people they're robbing, who are robbing, raping, and murdering. Liberals are always fighting to get criminals out of jail, looking to change the laws to make it harder to convict people of crimes, and trying to play up conflicts between poor communities and the police. Meanwhile, the poor Americans being menaced by these criminals are living in fear and desperately searching for jobs because businesses don't want to move into crime-ridden areas. It's not the gangbangers, the drug dealers, and cop killers who deserve sympathy from liberals. It's the people they are victimizing. Liberal America has fought hard to keep poor Americans in lousy, failing schools. It certainly doesn't have to be that way. It was George W. Bush who greatly expanded access to charter schools via No Child Left Behind, a policy that has, in practice, benefited poor Americans. Furthermore, it's conservatives who support school vouchers that would enable poor Americans to send their kids to many of the same elite private schools that rich Americans choose today. On the other hand, liberals want poor kids trapped in failing schools because giving them the option to flee those schools would take money out of the pockets of their teachers' union allies. Liberals also fight tooth and nail to kill testing standards and keep bad teachers in the schools. Just transfer them to another school. Nobody who places a high value on educating kids would do that. That's why if you are a poor American with a kid stuck in a terrible school system, the biggest hindrance you have to getting your child a better education is the American far left. Our young people also need to know that Ronald Reagan was spot on when he said this: "The best social program is a productive job for anyone who's willing to work." Yet, liberals work incessantly to make it harder for poor Americans to hold jobs. The CBO confirmed that Barack Hussein Obama's proposal to increase the minimum wage to $10.10 per hour would cost 500,000 jobs. And yet liberals continued to push for the increase. Today they push for $15 an hour. In D.C., big box stores like Walmart were targeted with a new law that would pay those companies 50% above minimum wage. As a result, Walmart decided not to build 6 new stores in an area which costs thousands of people much-needed jobs. We need to do everything possible to make it easier and more likely that businesses will hire poor Americans, not set up even more policies that keep them from getting jobs. The American economy today is stronger than in decades. Liberal Democrats can see the results of Trump's agenda, but their desire for power is stronger than their love of country. And so Democrat leaders, Pelosi in the House and Schumer in the Senate, are gearing up to take back that power in the 2018 midterm election. What if they succeed? What can America expect? In a word, obstructionism on an unprecedented scale. A few months ago, conservatives were calling Pelosi and Schumer do-nothing Democrats for refusing to sit down with the president to negotiate a budget to keep the government open. That was just a warm-up act for the obstructionists to come if they get control of one or both houses of Congress. Now, here are five things we can expect if the Democrats win big in the midterm elections. We will get no new conservative or constitutionalist judges. Should a Supreme Court vacancy arise in the next 2 years, Democrats will make sure it has zero chance of being filled. They will see it as payback for the Republican Senate's blockade of President Obama's nominee to fill the vacancy left by Justice Scalia's death. But they won't stop there. Democrats will also refuse to confirm any lower court nominees they don't care for, and that will be most of them. The Trump administration, working closely with Senate Republicans, has been remaking the federal courts, shifting away from judicial activism and toward an emphasis on the rule of law. If Democrats succeed this November, that process will grind to a halt. Despite being briefly courted by President Trump, Schumer and Pelosi have shown little interest in doing any deal with him. If they get control of either the House or the Senate, they will put off major legislation priorities until 2021, when they hope one of their own will occupy the White House. And if they make any exceptions to cutting deals with Trump, the bills they put on his desk will not be to the liking of conservatives. If Democrats get their hands on the gavels of congressional committees, they will spend little time on producing legislation. Why give President Trump any bipartisan accomplishments? Instead, they will devote their power and resources to methodically investigating the president, his staff, and his agency appointees. This will result in near paralysis for the administration. Rather than working on the president's agenda, the already thin political leadership in the federal agencies will find itself under siege from Capitol Hill. Agency leaders will be constantly on the defense, parrying committee document requests, subpoenas, and congressionally instigated inspector general investigations. Executive branch efforts to advance a right-of-center agenda will feel like trying to organize a softball league in an old folks' home. Senate Democrats have already perfected the art of using every procedural trick in the book to slow the confirmation process and keep the federal government understaffed. If Democrats pick up a majority of Senate seats, expect them to double down on that strategy. If they allow an occasional nominee to get through, they will extract steep policy concessions and other trade-offs in return. The result? Entrenched bureaucrats, some of them Obama appointees who burrowed into their career positions, will effectively be put in control of this country. The president's own appointees in each agency will be undermined from within as they try to implement his policies, the policies the people elected him to put into place. One of President Trump's signature accomplishments has been a robust program of deregulation aimed at promoting economic growth. Most of that has been implemented by executive action. But Democrats would have the power to stymie the president's deregulatory agenda if they seize control of one or both houses of Congress in November. The most effective weapon would be riders to appropriations bills that would deny the funding needed to carry out new Trump-era rules, rules that most Democrats in Congress don't like. President Trump could certainly veto such bills. However, he would eventually be forced into a government shutdown scenario. Trump may judge that worth the risk, but Democrats could keep his deregulatory priorities in limbo for the duration. If Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer get a free, fresh taste of power after the midterms, they won't be thinking about the dangers of overreaching. But those dangers, my friends, are real. Donald Trump pulled off an astonishing victory in 2016 because voters were tired of business as usual in Washington and wanted real change. The Democrats will be bullied by their far-left base to shut down President Trump's audacious agenda and even attempt to impeach him. If they do, not only could their midterm gains be short-lived, but they may even help boost the re-election of the president that they hate so viciously. I get frustrated at times when I speak with Democrats who simply will not see that their party has swung far left toward socialism. They speak of not voting at all or say how much they dislike Donald Trump. That dislike is understandable, given that CNN, MSNBC, ABC, CBS, NBC, and the nation's largest newspapers have made it their business to foment hate against the president. This country, under Trump, is on a roll. Anyone who doesn't see that just refuses to look. If you are one of those who allow far-left Democrats to regain control of the House or Senate in November because you've been told to hate Trump, we go back to less than 2% growth in the economy, more job-killing regulations, and a path to socialism for our country. Consider carefully the future because your country hangs in the balance. It is sad to see what has happened in our country and getting sadder. There is no more hypocritical Democrat than Senator Elizabeth Warren, a wealthy woman who plays to the crowd by castigating other wealthy people. Senator Warren wants her fellow Democrats to take on what she calls the billionaire class. Does Warren know that many, if not most, of this tiny group of people are liberal Democrats? On a recent podcast hosted by Mehdi Hassan of The Intercept, Hassan asked Warren if she thought Democrats lacked the guts to go after billionaires. Warren's response was, yeah. She's particularly upset at the handful of fellow Democrats who voted for a bill that watered down the Dodd-Frank banking regulation behemoth. Warren went on to say, until we have all the Democrats who are willing to take on the billionaire class, until we have all the Democrats who are willing to fight for the American people and not for a handful of billionaires and giant corporations, then it's going to stay an uphill fight. But that makes little sense. For one thing, there are only 585 of those people in the United States today, according to Forbes, and plenty of them are big-time Democrats. Does she intend, for example, to take on Warren Buffett, who, with a net worth of $84 billion, is the third richest man in the world? He's a longtime Democrat who's pushed for tax hikes on the rich, backed Hillary Clinton, and who gave 99% of his money to Democrats and liberal groups in the past four election cycles. Maybe she means Michael Bloomberg, the 11th richest man in the world, with a net worth of $50 billion. He's a huge gun control supporter. What about George Soros, who's worth $8 billion? He's an uber-liberal who finances a multitude of left-wing groups like Center for American Progress and MoveOn.org. He recently invested $3 million in the New York Times. In 2016, Soros gave at least $7 million to Hillary Clinton's Priorities USA Super PAC. He's donated more than $61 million to Democrats and liberals since 1989. Does Warren want to take on environmental activist Tom Steyer? His net worth is $1.6 billion, and he donated more than $91 million to Democrats in 2016 alone and funded a $20 million ad campaign calling for President Trump's impeachment. Or perhaps she means Netflix CEO Reed Hastings, a net worth of $2.7 billion, except that Hastings is another prominent Democrat who eagerly supported Clinton and just signed a deal with Barack Obama to produce programs for Netflix. Other billionaires, Warren says, Democrats should have the guts to take on would include liberals like Google's Larry Page at $48.8 billion, Lorraine Powell Jobs, $18.8 billion, Oprah Winfrey, $2.7 billion, Starbucks' Howard Schultz, $2.7 billion, Facebook's Sheryl Sandberg, $1.6 billion. Of the 36 billionaires who made campaign contributions over the past four cycles, 40% of their money, totaling $148 million, went to Democrats, according to data compiled by OpenSecrets.org. And this does not include dark money donations, funds given to groups engaged in politics that don't have to disclose their donors. And what about those greedy bankers? Turns out plenty of them are Democrat supporters, too. A few years ago, Yahoo Finance teamed with CrowPac to rank CEOs based on political donations. One of the five most liberal on the list was Goldman Sachs' CEO, Lloyd Blankfein, whose company made news during the election when it turned out that Goldman had paid Hillary Clinton $675,000 to appear at three Q&A sessions, two of them run by Blankfein himself. In sixth and seventh place were James Gorman of Morgan Stanley and Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan Chase. Billionaire hedge fund manager Jim Simmons gave more than $7 million to Hillary Clinton's Priorities USA Action Super PAC. He gave $2.6 million to the Democratic House and Senate majority PACs, according to OpenSecrets.org. Lawrence Fink, the CEO of investing giant BlackRock, is another prominent Democrat who wants companies he invests in to have a positive impact on society, meaning support liberal causes. Bank of America CEO Brian Moynihan has over the years given money to Jean Shaheen, Patrick Kennedy, Harold Ford Jr., Ted Kennedy, Ed Markey, and John Kerry. He gave $6,300 to then-Senator Chris Dodd, he of the Dodd-Frank fame. Sure, lots of billionaires support Republicans and oppose Warren's leftist politics. So do lots of people in all income levels. But the idea that the billionaire class opposes all that is good in this country and that they must be defeated to get anything done is nothing more than sophomoric political posturing, and the head of that is Elizabeth Warren. Frankly, I don't care whether Elizabeth Warren has any Indian blood in her veins. She hasn't been able to prove that she has, although she said she had in order to take a job at Harvard, a very lucrative job, paying her a lot of money because she had that minority background. To this date, she's been unable to show that she does have it. But she is a serious socialist along with Bernie Sanders. That's where I just get so frustrated with my Democrat friends, and I have many of them, because they can't seem to see what has happened to their party. That it's been taken over by hard leftist socialists, if you will. Bernie Sanders, I have no doubt, is not just a socialist, he's a communist. He spent his honeymoon in Russia, for Pete's sake. But my Democrat friends can't seem to understand that these are the people that are taking their party to the hard left. We can all pray that they will soon realize what's happening and stand up and vote with conservatives in November to keep the House and the Senate in the hands of conservatives who can take the president's agenda forward. We need that. We need it desperately. Vote in November.